Episode 17 of The Black Traveller. It's good to be here.
Hi everyone, good to be back. Got a lot to talk about today, Frank.
We say that every week.
We do. Quite a few topics.
I've caught you out, Nigel.
You have. You've seen me. You've caught me repeating myself.
Well, we do, though. We've got to reflect on the election.
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about some travel news as well.
That's right. And some stuff in Italy again, Series A.
Yeah. Right. A little bit of stuff about racism in football and the battle against it.
Yeah.
And whether or not that's going well.
I
don't think it is. So we're going to have a talk about that. Anyway, should we get to it?
Let's get into this. So let's probably start off by reflecting on the UK election.
Yeah, so it was a
polarising one, wasn't it?
It was a polarising election. Mm. You know, a lot of people were talking about it as the Brexit election, essentially.
Right, yeah. That was the number one issue on people's
minds. I think it was, wasn't it? And it was quite a shocking result. Massive majority for the Conservative Party, Boris Johnson's party.
Yeah.
We're not going to labour the point too much. I don't think we're going to get into it in too much depth.
I think people are quite exhausted of talking about this, right?
Yeah, but I think it's just going to be interesting what happens now, what it means for the society that we live in, what it means for the direction in policy terms.
Yeah, that's right.
Whether or not the Conservative Party are going to, in a lot of policy areas, shift a little bit towards the centre in order to buoy up their support in some of the constituencies that they've just won, a lot of which are in the more deprived areas, some of them in Northern England.
And even the perception, I guess, of the UK, because I think a lot of people will see the media talking about our election and maybe talk specifically about our new Prime Minister and maybe some of the right-wing rhetoric. And I do wonder whether some of the publications that we've seen maybe in other countries have made people a little bit concerned about travelling to the UK and concerned that, you know, hate crime is maybe more likely, especially if you're a black person or you're a person of colour. What I can say on the ground is I personally haven't had, you know, or seen examples of that yet. But however, you know, in saying that, since the Brexit vote, we have seen a rise in hate crime across the UK. Yeah. I don't know the exact statistic, but it is more visible than it ever has been, and probably is more geared towards, would you say, people who follow the Islamic faith more than anything else. I think that's certainly the more visible hate crime.
I think that is, but I think also I've heard a lot of stories of people who have Eastern European backgrounds as well.
That's right.
Or who appear to have Eastern European backgrounds. That's or. Right. Iberian, you know, people who look like maybe they're from Portugal or Spain or Italy, having a bit of a hard time from people, you know, people saying racist things to them, tend to go back to their own country, these sorts of things.
Horrible people.
Yeah, and I think it feeds into that general perception of Britain perhaps not being as welcoming a place as it was seen to be. Yeah, and I think that when you look at the NHS and you look at the number, I know, of nurses, for instance, from the EU who are coming to the UK is declining.
Right,
it's been really difficult to attract certain types of workers into the UK because I think in part there's the uncertainty around Brexit and what's going to happen. But there's also the idea that, is this a place that really welcomes me?
Right.
Yeah.
You have a sense of belonging when you're here.
And you're valued. And it's not just a sense of, well, come in, do your work while we need you, and then go.
Exactly.
You know, that's not the same as coming here and make a life.
Exactly. Yeah, if you choose to move somewhere, whether it's for a job for 2 years or much longer, one of your objectives is to integrate into that society, feel like, you know, you're a local, feel welcome, and make it your home.
Yeah.
And I guess it's difficult to determine exactly what's going to happen, certainly in this Conservative government, for the next 4 to 5 years. But I really hope that people appreciate that. You know, there are lots of spots in the UK which are incredibly diverse, and you are welcome. London is open.
Yeah, I think
From that perspective. And I think that's, you know, I remember like monitoring Twitter the day after the election, and there are lots of people who, let's say, are quite liberal, were really scared and really concerned about what it meant for them in their day-to-day life. And this re-emergence of, you know, just hateful language.
Yeah.
That sometimes when a kind of a right-leaning government is in place, there's the assumption from like nationalists and people that are hateful that that's their opportunity to get out there, right? And to voice their opinion on why their policies and their ideologies are right, whereas actually they're terribly wrong and they're terribly hateful. But so far, I mean, we haven't had any of these experiences so far. It's very early days, but I like to think that London is a bit of a safe haven. Not entirely, though.
No, not entirely. I mean, I think there are pockets of everyday racism, that's people right. experience. I had a strange, I don't know if I've mentioned this to you. I don't think it was, did I mention that bus stop experience to you?
Well,
if you don't recall
it. What happened?
Well, this was about a week and a half ago, actually.
Okay.
And I was, I did mention it. I was in Stoke Newington. I sat down at the bus.
Did we say it on the podcast?
I think we did, yeah. So okay, I won't go over it again, but I sat down and the woman got up, I mean, that's not Brexit related, I don't think necessarily.
No.
Who knows whether it's related to racism or not.
But made you feel uncomfortable.
It made me feel uncomfortable, yeah. So you do have you do have things that happen to you in your day-to-day life. Quite a few high-profile people as well, quite famous people, have had bad experiences in restaurants, but people of colour, black people.
Right.
And that's been on Twitter a little bit, or going into bars or places in London.
Not getting let in. And
yeah,
I think one of the Hamilton cast.
Absolutely, yeah, right, yeah. Or director, recently. I think he might have been.
The director, yeah. Right. And actually tried to take a few of the cast members in and
yeah.
got rejected at the door, and then actually a load of other people who were white were allowed in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's a clear example of racism.
Yeah.
You know, in its purest issues, form.
Absolutely. So, some issues there with being served and all that sort of thing.
That's right.
Yeah. And there's another guy who's a jazz saxophonist. Soweto Kinch.
Yeah.
From Birmingham, actually.
Right. And, Birmingham.
Yeah, mentioned that again.
Yeah, your hometown.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And he had a problem with an Italian restaurant recently where he was treated really, really rudely. He put a video up on Twitter.
Talking about his experience,
and he was in sort of pretty much forced out of the place eventually.
Yeah.
So yeah, you get things like that. But I think just in general, if you're thinking of visiting London, certainly if you're a person of colour thinking of travelling to London, your experience is likely to be overwhelmingly positive.
Yeah, I'd like to think so. Yeah. And actually, it's an important point to mention that even though, let's say, we have a right leaning government now in the UK, whatever you believe, like, you can still table those beliefs within your communities and society as a whole, and I think it's really important that you do. Like, we have to be able to speak our lived truths, and now more than ever, whatever it is you stand for, don't shy away from using your voice, you know, to put yourself out there, just the way that we are.
Absolutely.
On this podcast, yeah. As well, right?
You know, and we've got to remember as well, we've had a right-leaning government for the past nine years. So yeah, it's not a new thing. Yeah, it's not a new thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Unfortunately for many, so it's not a great thing. So, all right, should we tie up on our election chat?
Yeah, that's it.
Before you get bored and switch off.
Exactly. Like, we'll be back with some more of this in 5 years' time, for the next election.
We've got the impeachment happening in the US, so we're not even going to get into that. We're not even going to get into that. So what else has been happening?
Okay, so there's a bit of, in terms of travel.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah, there was a little bit around British Airways. A report came out, and this is interesting because it was ranking British Airways in terms of short haul travel.
Okay, so short haul being really like 2 hours or less, probably.
I think so, yeah. Something sometimes like a little bit more, but yeah, but certainly about that.
Yeah.
And it ranked it as the second worst. This is, I'm assuming, from the UK.
Okay.
The second worst short haul carrier.
Wow. Second worst short haul carrier.
Yeah, it was ranked as. And that's, they based it ranked on food and drink.
Okay.
Seats.
Non-existent. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Value for money.
Okay.
The one ranked lowest was Ryanair.
Okay.
Who
lowest for short haul travel.
Lowest for short haul
travel. But probably one of the highest in volume.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're very profitable, I think, as well.
Incredibly profitable, yeah.
I think the thing with Ryanair is I mean, even O'Leary, who's the I think chief executive or the boss of Ryanair,
is
quite clear that you get what you pay for.
Basically,
yeah, you pay very little.
Yeah,
it takes you where you want to go.
Yeah, exactly.
And apart from that,
you land
safely, hopefully. And apart from that, don't expect too much. You know,
right.
So Ryanair is a very much a no-frills airline,
right? Okay.
But
no-frills is like it's entirely stripped back in terms of like the experience, right? So you get a seat.
You get a seat.
There isn't really much leg room.
No.
There's no, obviously, if you want food, well, there's not even a food option. Right?
Oh, okay. I think maybe.
I think on EasyJet there is.
Oh, okay.
Is there a Ryanair? I'm not sure.
Do you know what? The reason I don't know is I've been boycotting Ryanair.
Yeah.
For about 10 years. Yeah, okay. Only because
this
may or may not be true still. I heard some pretty bad things about their employee relations and the way, this is going back a long time now, about them, for instance, charging their staff for their uniforms and these sorts of things. And I don't know whether or not that's still true or whether indeed it was true back then, but I heard that and I decided I'm going to use other carriers.
Yeah.
So I haven't used Ryanair for a long time.
You've got a long memory as well.
I tell you, when I set down a boycott, I can go 20 years right here. I can boycott for
that's
a long time.
That's admirable.
Yeah.
I'm never going to get on your bad side. My goodness, you won't talk to me for 20 years.
20 years, man. 20 after least, 20, you're good, man.
At least, yeah, exactly. So,
yeah. So, okay. Yeah, so Ryanair, I'm not sure about the food with Ryanair, but yeah, maybe you don't, but you certainly, you know, if you want hold luggage, you're gonna have to pay for that. Yeah,
every little nook and cranny.
Yeah, that's where they make their money. Whereas BA traditionally was the national carrier.
Yeah.
For Britain, it had a very, very good reputation, say 10 years ago, and then they went through a big cost cutting exercise. And for me, I don't know if you've been on BA recently, but the experience has really changed. It's gone. For me, it's gone downhill.
Yeah.
And
it downhill in terms of quality of the food, service levels, just general experience.
Absolutely. Well, now the food you now have to purchase. Yeah. So now it's Marks and Spencer's food that you have to buy on the plane.
When did this happen?
Yeah.
Really?
Okay, yeah, this has happened maybe a year.
This is for short haul flights.
This is for short haul. Yeah, gotcha. This is for short haul. Wow. So you need to purchase the food now. You don't get any food at all.
So you get like an M&S lunchbox that you can buy.
That you can buy from the menu. You
buy it from M&S and put it in your bag. It'd be
cheaper,
price,
probably,
wouldn't
it? Yeah, you need leg room, Frank.
I think, even for me,
you're 6 foot seven. I'm a foot less than that.
Yeah.
But even for me, the leg room's challenging on BA sometimes.
Wow, that's terrible.
Yeah, so that's gone down. I mean, value for money, personally, I think's okay with BA.
Yeah,
I found that all right. But obviously, this rating isn't good for them. And
it's not great.
Yeah, I think you look at the brand,
had
a lot of kudos around the brand, and you've got to ask yourself whether or not the brand's been damaged by this. It's a very competitive market and they've obviously had to had to save money.
Yeah.
But I guess only time will tell whether that's the right way to go. They are more profitable. They were making very little profit a few years ago.
And now
they're more profitable.
So hopefully they take that and they choose to reinvest in training and paying staff well, in creating better experiences. And I think that's key, isn't it? Like, some of us travel where we're okay with no frills. We're okay with as cheap as possible. We take as little as possible. And then there are others of us who actually the experience, the journey to the destination is just as important. It's part of your holiday, isn't it? And it's I think that is a major factor in terms of who will win over the next kind of period of time. It's becoming incredibly competitive in terms of pricing and attracting people's attention, different modes of travel. You know, for example, if you're going to Paris, are you going to take from London? Are you going to take the Eurostar or are you going to take a plane?
Yeah.
I'd take Eurostar because actually it's just far more convenient. It may cost a little bit more, but I'd rather do that than take a Ryanair flight to Paris, which just sounds like an awful idea. Whereas I get the leg room on Eurostar, I can take extra luggage. And I think it's an interesting time, isn't it? And,
it really is.
So who was in the top? Kind of,
well, for short haul.
For short haul, who's on the top five then?
A company called Origny.
Never heard of them.
Sounds French, but I'm not sure. Never heard of them. Jet2.
Someone's heard of them. Jet2, I've heard of.
Yeah, SAS, S-A-S.
Okay, yeah.
Aer Lingus.
Aer Lingus.
And Swiss.
And then Swiss for the top five.
Yeah,
okay,
number six was Norwegian, who I've flown with, who was superb.
Really?
Yeah,
oh, Norwegian.
Free
Wi-Fi.
Superb.
Oh, wow.
Free Wi-Fi.
Free
well,
Wi-Fi
free
for
Wi-Fi
such
Wi-Fi
a...
Yeah.
A no-frill. They're a bit of a no-frill long-haul airline, aren't they?
Yeah. Lufthansa as well were in there. So that was that.
Nice.
And then
for long haul,
long haul
in the top five.
The top was Singapore.
Singaporean Airlines, okay, yeah. I've heard they're pretty good.
Qatar.
Yeah.
Emirates.
Yeah.
Virgin Atlantic.
Virgin, really? They're in the top five?
Yeah, they're number four.
They're okay. I wouldn't say they're amazing though. They used to be, like BA, I think they used to be pretty good.
Okay.
but I think their jets are getting a bit old. Okay. And yeah, the food is not amazing.
Yeah.
So
and then KLM.
KLM,
what was that? Pretty much a very good experience with KLM, flown with them a lot. So
you are the black traveller, yeah, Andrew. I always say it. But you're the person that represents this podcast the best. You've got a deep travel experience.
Thank you, Frank. And then down the bottom of the list, actually, American Airlines.
American Airlines,
I've never flown with. They're bad for you?
I don't think they're that bad versus like United.
Okay.
I've had worse.
Well, they're down in the bottom five as well.
United, yeah. Delta for me, oh my gosh, cannot stand Delta.
Really? Yeah.
Cannot stand Delta. But American Airlines, I'd say for them to be like right at the bottom is probably a little bit harsh, but I could be wrong.
Okay.
For long haul flights within America, I'm not sure what the experience is like. So
yeah, British Airways are down the bottom of the list. Right. Etihad,
okay. Which,
I don't know, just from the marketing, I thought we were really high-end brand, but maybe that's probably just the sponsorship deals they managed to do. It's just placed that perception in my mind that they're a very good airline. That
they're pretty good.
Yeah, like they're almost like Qatar.
Yeah.
But who knows? I don't know.
And it's interesting because actually I think British Airways, American Airlines, Air Canada,
yeah,
they're all in a Star Alliance, right? Is that Star Alliance? I think so.
But yeah, British Airways are certainly.
Yeah, because they you know, so if you book a British Airways flight, it might be fulfilled by American Airlines, right? Yeah, so maybe there's a whole thing that they need to look at there in terms of cost saving and experience. So
looks like it. Yeah,
interesting.
So that's it. And then also the other thing was that 737 MAX was grounded, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. They're going to stop production, I think, as of next year. And lots of controversy around that particular jet because it had two fatal plane crashes where the pilots really had no control, apparently, according to the story.
The thing was just diving. The computer error. Computer system error, essentially.
Right. And then over time, there was this debate on whether the plane craft is safe or not. And now it's got to the point where Boeing are going to cease production of the plane, which is a bit scary to know that this was ever just safe enough to put out there to consumers.
Yeah.
You know, clearly there were a few more hoops that they had to kind of go through in order to make sure it was okay.
Yeah.
Right? You know, for a consumer flight.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds to me like the right idea to essentially can production because I'm not getting on one.
Because of what happened, I would look at the jet that is flying.
Yeah.
That has taken my flight, and if it was a 737 MAX, I would change my flight.
Exactly. Or you wouldn't book with that carrier
if you know that carrier.
Yeah. So, I think it's a pretty toxic.
Yeah.
If not Boeing completely, then definitely 737 MAX.
Yeah.
No one's going near it, so
it
makes sense to can it. But I've got a good friend who's an aeronautical engineer.
Okay. By trade,
works for Airbus.
Yeah.
And he just tells me how much of the plane is essentially computer controlled.
Right.
You know, I've had conversations with him and it's basically the things fly themselves pretty much.
Yeah, exactly.
So obviously the structure of the plane is very, very important, but also the software, the
critical
computer control. Yeah, I mean, if that goes wrong, you're pretty much doomed.
Yeah, you are doomed. But there's nothing that you can do because, you know, it's like having a black screen on your laptop. Right, you know, or blue screen on your laptop where it's just had a fatal error.
Yeah.
What can you do to bring it back? You know, if you translate that to, you know, flying an aircraft, well, that's fatal.
Yeah, yeah.
And the real question will be, what is Boeing going to do with the next plane that it puts out there? And what kind of rigorous safety measures are they going to go through before they put it into mass production? You know, this is really serious, right?
So. And also on plane safety, just to say, my friend, aeronautical engineer, worked in the airline industry for more than two decades.
Right.
And you know when people have this issue with flying, say, I don't like flying.
Yeah.
He says that statistically, and from what he knows, the only parts of the flight really to be concerned about, which is kind of obvious, is the takeoff.
Right.
and then landing.
Right, interesting.
Yeah, okay. So and when I'm in that seat, I'm always very, once it's up,
yeah,
I'm you're thankful. Good to go. Once I'm down, I'm good. You know,
I'm exactly the same.
Yeah, and it's very rare for a plane to fall. It does happen, but it's very rare for a plane to fall out of the sky.
Yeah, exactly.
Once it's up there. But, you know, there's things will happen potentially when the thing's taking off.
That's right, yeah.
Or when it's landing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you can get through
that. Got to interview the pilots ahead of taking off. It's just like, how many times have you done this before?
Yeah.
Because I've had some landings where I'm like, I remember being on the landing, I think it was like a couple of years ago, and it didn't quite hit the ground in the right way. Yeah. So the pilot had to pull it up again and then take it down. I was just like, wow, this is nobody.
Yeah.
Not on my watch.
No.
Please, like, do not.
Yeah, it's scary.
It's really, yeah, it's quite, it's scary for sure. Yeah, it's scary, isn't it? So, but overall, I feel very safe when traveling on a plane.
I do.
Yeah, I feel really safe. I think there are times where it's like there's a lot of turbulence.
Yeah.
And then you're kind of questioning, like, is everything going to be okay? And then, like a young child looking to their parent, I look to the air stewards and they're like,
if they
razor
look
sharp.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. If they look okay, then I'm like, okay, things are going to be
if
fine.
They're panicking, you
if they're panicking,
work,
I'm going to be like, okay, where's that mask? And where's that safety jacket? Because I'm putting that on right now.
Do you watch the safety announcement generally?
I generally do, actually.
Do you?
I generally do. I'd say, I mean, these days they do like a video version and there's less like physical kind of involvement in the safety video. But, you know, sometimes if I haven't flown for a little while, I'll watch a recap and I'll just see if this plane is different, if the jet is different, maybe the safety jacket's in a different place or all of that. So
I mean, I always want to know where the emergency exit is.
Yeah, exactly.
That's definitely true. Yeah.
Exactly.
So I'm always thinking about when I'm sitting in that seat and I'm just thinking, well, I'm not thinking, who am I going to climb? I'm going to have to climb over to get out of here.
And you know, you've just reminded me of a story where there was a man who was suffering a panic attack.
Wow, okay.
And he tried to open the door of a British Airways flight to Saudi Arabia. So Dillian White, you know, the boxer Dillian White. So his brother, I think, was on this flight.
Okay.
And basically approached the man and managed to stop him. And his brother is also a boxer.
Okay, wow.
So he kind of, I think he spoke to the person and he said, look, calm down and like, you know, you're not doing this. And then in the end had to kind of just hold him tightly, restrain him and say, like, trust me, like, you're not opening this door. And I don't think there would have been a way for him to open the door anyway. I think there's an extra process. Apparently, there's an additional process that the flight crew need to do or get involved with for that hatch to open. But not to scare you on your next flight.
No.
But that happened, I think, like 2 weeks ago or something.
Yeah. Okay, well. Okay.
So bizarre.
Yeah. Well, I'm
so
always,
bizarre.
Yeah, like I say, I'm always, I want to know where those emergency exits are. You know,
yeah.
I wanna, that's, you know, that's for me. I might not watch much of the rest of it.
Yeah.
But I'm looking out for those exits so I know where I've got to get to. But one thing about plane safety is I always think it's kind of all or nothing in a way, isn't it?
Yeah,
you
that's
sort of
right.
Think, well, if it falls
every
out,
flight you take, it's like you got to think.
You got to put your trust in the plane.
That's true.
Okay, yeah. I mean, we're nearly done. The only thing we were going to talk about a little bit was
again,
Italian football races.
I guess probably just to wrap up on that because you had those kind of an artwork, right, which was meant to be
an anti-racist campaign,
but yet the images they used. Were very racist indeed.
They were, yeah. So images of three chimps, essentially.
Chimps.
Three
monkeys. That's right,
And I don't really know even what they were trying to get over with it. Is it that we're all the same? We're all monkeys?
According to the artist, I think he was trying to portray that, look, we're all the same. We're all technically monkeys, and therefore let me create these three images of three different monkeys who are slightly different. So one monkey has got like a white border to it and it's got blue eyes.
Okay.
The other monkey's got like deep set brown eyes and like a kind of an orange and blue border. And then the third monkey has got also brown eyes, but I think
Asian
that,
kind of
yeah, the artist has tried to make that monkey look Southeast Asian by the eye shape. Just abysmal. Just abysmal. Yeah. I mean, blind spots is one thing, unconscious bias is one thing, but when you're just ignorant to believe that, you could put this out to the world and it'd be okay,
And don't you check this with somebody?
Right.
It's don't like, you check surely. It? Run it past a couple of black folks?
Surely. See what they, yeah, see exactly. What they make. Like, this is racist imagery. Like, come on. Like, we can do a lot better. It's like ridiculous. Isn't
very
it?
Odd, so, wasn't it? Very strange. When I first saw it, I didn't pick up on the eye difference.
Yeah.
I just couldn't understand what it was trying to portray. Why this would be an image of choice for an anti-racist campaign. That just didn't make any sense to me.
It's just inappropriate. It undermines any kind of positive intent, you know, with the campaign. Yeah, and then the last point, just to wrap up, John Boyega came out in the news recently saying he's met Americans who don't know black people live in London.
Yeah.
I mean, we're here.
Okay. It's not just us.
It's
more than a million black people in London.
That's right. And London's 40% people of colour.
Yeah.
So it's interesting feedback. Obviously, that is a very broad stroke comment from John Boyega.
Yeah.
But I have had conversations which are similar, though.
Okay.
Where probably a long time ago, you know, when I first went to the States, I think back in 2006 or 2005. I spoke to some black people and they just weren't aware that we had such a kind of bustling community of diversity in London. And in a way, it's like it's hard to define what's happening outside of your own small little circle and community sometimes, right?
Is there a certain insularity, you think, in America, though? Is that part of it? Because, you know, when I look at some of the black travel blogs and things, that they tend to be, a lot of them are American, but and a lot of them speak about African Americans, almost as though all black people are African, all people of African descent are African American,
right?
Yeah. So I don't know, almost don't, not understanding that Africa's got quite a few people,
nuances, and
African people, you know, and there are African people of African descent all over the world,
exactly,
and massive communities in a lot of countries, and
so
I mean, certainly something I think that we appreciate, but maybe I don't know how much of it's an American thing where they perhaps think about race as an American concern in some ways,
right?
You know, I don't know.
It's hard. Yeah, it's hard to say. Yeah. It's hard to say. But I think fundamentally there are lots of misconceptions around black people. I remember growing up as a child, you know, in my secondary school, and I think I've mentioned this on the earlier podcast when that song Mambo Number 5 came out. Is it Lou Bega?
Lou Bega
is a black man.
Lou Bega
is a black man who lives in Germany.
Okay.
And could not believe that there were black people in Germany. I had no idea as a 12-year-old growing up in London.
Yeah.
I guess these days, probably no excuse. You should know, there are black people in London and across the world.
Yeah.
But that's why we're here.
Yeah,
right? We're here to hopefully kind of dispel any of these myths.
Yeah.
So
John Boyega was what? Just taken aback by the fact that that people...
He's just met a lot of American people and just had these conversations where they were confused that black people were in London. And I guess it just depends what kind of what news you're taking in, how well travelled you are.
Your perception of England as
Your
well.
Perception you know, of England.
You think
and
it's... You think of Dick Van Dyke.
It's all, yeah, exactly. And it's all...
Victorian
England. Downton Abbey and all of that stuff. Yeah. And it maybe was, you know, 100 years ago.
It's not like that anymore.
It certainly isn't like that now. But to be honest, how many conversations has John Boyega had to quantify that assumption? It's just, you know, a few people who probably just need to get out in their community a little bit more and travel to Europe and see what it's like.
Look on the internet.
Or go on the internet, even easier. Go on Google Maps and look at all the different kind of blurred out faces on Google Maps.
There you go.
And you have a good subsection of who's in those communities. There we go.
All right.
It's fantastic.
Wow. Okay. So we're done. That's us for this week.
Yeah, that's right.
That's us for this week. Thanks for listening. As always, safe travels.
Safe travels. Merry Christmas if you celebrate Christmas. Well. Happy holidays if you don't.
This is our last one for Christmas, isn't it?
This is, our last absolutely.
Christmas. Exactly. We should have done something Christmassy.
Well, you know, not everyone celebrates Christmas.
No, that's true. They're very true. But happy holidays. Yeah.
Happy holidays
is a thing
way.
To say, maybe.
That's right. Yeah.
But anyway, we'll catch up with you
very soon.
Very soon, early new year or just before that.
Yeah.
Have a great time.
Safe travels, everyone. See you soon.
See you.